This is the ACTINF podcast, where we provide short clips from the Active Inference Institute weekly live streams. If you want to take a deeper dive into this material, check out the entire live stream at the Active Inference Institute YouTube channel. The link to the live stream is provided in the episode description. I am Blue Knight, the host and curator of this episode, which is clipped from live stream number 13.1. This discussion is based on the 2020 paper entitled Integrating Cybernetic Big Five Theory with the Free Energy Principle, a new strategy for modeling personalities as complex systems by Adam Safran and Colin DeYoung. The discussion will be facilitated by Daniel Friedman, who is going to start us off with a question.
You said that the characteristic adaptations and life outcomes are exhaustive. And so that really is like we can partition them into the adaptations are the things that the agent carries with them, the synapses that have changed or the scars they bear, but basically what is not their surrounding, and the life outcome is the niche. So then there's this stigmergy where the agent is doing niche construction. So this is from a different non-active inference, non-niche construction framework, but finding resonances and finding concordances here, because that's kind of what we talk about. It's like the learning of agents and then the way that influences their niche. And then you had this idea of acting as if, like the example with the person who's being forced by their niche to implement, I'm a kind of person who says hello in this way or things like that. And then that also relates to what Stephen was saying earlier about drama and about performance. So maybe Stephen, do you have a thought on that?
I am Stephen Sinnott. I'm in Toronto. And the thing I like about what was mentioned here is how personality traits can be adapted to context, like someone's a salesperson. I thought that was a useful example. And then how that obviously starts to then change your whole broader way of seeing things. And one area I think might be interesting, and there's the work of Harry Hest, who's revisiting the work of Roger Barker from the 60s. We did a lot of work on behavior settings. So he looked at a whole load of children across the US, and he looked at how their behavior was when they're in a school or in the cafe or different places. He found the difference in behavior between settings for the same child was bigger than the difference in behavior between personalities of children, i.e. the same child was changing its behavior radically based on the settings. And that work kind of got lost, but Harry Heft has sort of been really pushing that again. I think that can tie into this, is maybe there's personality traits are, I suppose, you know, how much stability there is, but could behavior settings be kind of like that kind of more dynamic version of personality traits? And I think active inference, it makes that more possible to even have that conversation rather than the more sort of static psychometric data, which is kind of top down and kind of you just have to accept. It feels like this is you can get in there and play with it a bit more in different directions.
Thanks for sharing that, Stephen. We'll go Colin and then anyone else who raises their hand.
I'm Colin DeYoung and I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm a professor in the psychology department here at the University of Minnesota. Yeah, so that's a really good point, Stephen, which is that there are differences that people have to specific situations that are distinct from their broad patterns of consistency and personality. And that's a long-running debate in personality psychology going back to the late 60s. And the resolution to it basically is that, yes, there are these relatively stable ways in which people respond to specific situations. And that's what I'm trying to capture with the idea of characteristic adaptations. But then if you go across a bunch of situations and you take the person's average, there are also persistent averages that differ from person to person. And that would correspond to the trait. So you can have both of these things in the same set of data. Will Fleeson is a personality psychologist who has really been instrumental in collecting the data to show this very basic feature of what are we measuring when we measure a personality trait with something like a questionnaire, where we're just asking somebody for this sort of general impression of themselves. And so what he's done is used experience sampling methods, where you have somebody's smartphone and it, you know, pings them like 5 times a day and asks them, like, how have you been acting for the last, you know, half an hour, for the last hour? And then you get them to rate their behavior on a set of, on a set of descriptions or categories. What you see is that as you said, people have as much or even more variability within their own behavior as there is variability in terms of their average behavior from person to person. And yet, nonetheless, those averages are quite stable. So if you do this for 1 week, you can get a whole, you'll get a, he calls them density distributions, right? You basically just get a, you know, and they're usually fairly normally shaped. And you do that for 1 week, you get this whole pattern. So sometimes the person's acting very introverted, sometimes they're acting very extroverted, you know, it ranges. But there's a peak, and that peak is very stable if you do it again in another week. So the person goes through another week of behavior, and again, they're varying very widely in their behavior. But if you look at their average level of that particular behavior, it's quite stable over time. And so, and then he's also shown that that correlates quite highly with the ratings that we get from these general personality questionnaires. So the questionnaires really are tapping into this sort of general average tendency of specific behavior, even though, of course, the behavior itself varies widely from situation to situation and over time, both due to situational affordances and due to whatever is going on internally in terms of the goals that the person is pursuing at that moment.
Awesome. Let's go Marco, then Adam.
Hi, I'm Marco. I'm from Holland and used to work on active inference in London, but now I'm just enjoying the progress from the sidelines. So someone mentioned, Stephen mentioned the kids in the classrooms and the context, and I think development might be also very interesting here because personality might be relatively stable across a lifetime, but I think hopefully we can agree that personality also enriches. And in that process of enrichment, and I would also say empowerment, there's, I think, you could say a shift between the balance of endogenous and exogenous influence on an agent's behavioral adaptation or to its niches. And so there's a change in the scope in which the personality has a relatively large influence on the way they adapt. And I guess I'm just asking about thoughts on how you might picture that kind of process of how personality might actually in the beginning largely concern itself with how to engage with the world such that it might internalize that which it normally co-opts from the environment. So normally you offload a lot of stuff to behaviorally adapt, which might explain the variation due to environment. But then over time, as it does so, it internalizes certain heuristics, certain patterns, certain policies, and learn from environments to kind of enrich its personality and then extend the scope of influence from their personality. Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, cool thought. Yeah. Adam, and then anyone else.
Hi, I'm Adam. I am based out of Bloomington, Indiana. I'm a postdoctoral researcher. So a few thoughts from before and then some thoughts on Marco's thoughts. So the Fleeson description of personality as a kind of density distribution, I think, and the issue of the stability of personality and the variance of it within individuals across contexts, which is part of the reason the book that was this chapter was part of was called Modeling Persons and Situations. But taking these ideas together, we're kind of in the same territory that of these fundamental questions in the free energy principle of like, what is the ontological status of a non-equilibrium steady state distribution bounded by a Markov blanket? What's the granularity over which we can find this thing that we're identifying? So it's your, and so Colin will be able to speak more to this, but this idea of like, there are ways of describing that your degree of variability across contexts is itself something that can be stable. And this could be itself part of your personality. Now kind of loop back to what you were just describing, Marco. I really like that idea. So it's like you're starting out in a situation where through this interaction between you and this context that you're entering into in certain ways based on your own expectations and the expectations of people in the environment and the structures that are there built up from this, there's a certain stability. And then you this stability ends up shaping you, both just as a consequence of like, this is the thing for you to predict, but also in the active inferential sense, and as you're saying, empowerment, this is what's going to help me get better purchase. I'm reducing my uncertainty with respect to realizing the value of existing. And so this idea of your personality being kind of internalization of structure, and maybe at a certain stage, almost like a kind of amortized inference in terms of which I got from you. Yeah, I really like that idea a lot.
Cool. Adam, Shannon?
Hey, I'm Shannon Crooks. I'm in South Dakota, so also in the snow, but I'm based at the University of California in Merced. Going on this developmental thread, the idea that like when you're in a neonate in a body, you're literally relying on someone else's interoceptive states and biological states to regulate everything about your interoceptive and biological states. And then you're born and you're still kind of relying on the caregiver's interoceptive states or their behavior when they're holding you or coming to comfort you. This, I think, could relate to what Marco was saying about how your personality develops. So first, if a personality is something like a collection of affective states and behaviors, and an infant is completely sort of reliant on the environment and the social environment to regulate its own personalities. And as you grow through toddlerhood, you slowly are able to control this yourself. Like you can maintain your own body budget a little bit more, learn how to get your own blanket if you're cold, or like self-soothe. And then you grow older and maybe you're taught how to make music and learning that this is a new way that you can explore your personality or create it. But I feel like this can kind of connect if instead of looking, or not instead of, but in addition to looking at averages, but looking at like a time series of personality development over time, and like you could do at any point in time or at any range of time, some sort of like what would be the active inference model of your life in infancy, in toddlerhood, in, you know, rowdy teenage years, and as adult, and you'll find these like steady trajectories at the same time. Awesome. That was a bit rambling.
No.
I hope someone else can pick that up.
Let me connect that to a few other points. So Adam raised this question of what is the level of the thing, or how do we identify things from empirical data specifically so that we can use it in active inference type or free energy principle type models? Do we use renormalization group or principal component analysis or some type of adjacency matrix, some type of Markov blanket? What are those things that we're actually going to be modeling? And that reminds me a lot of a theory called ANT, actor network theory, by Bruno Latour. And then also on the ant wavelength, Colin was mentioning how there's so much variation within individuals, but also stable differences between. And that reminded me a lot of my graduate school work with ant colonies, where day to day, the variation across all the ant colonies was extreme. If it was raining, they would do one thing. If it was very dry versus if it had rained the day before, those were massive determiners of colony behavior. However, across days and even across years, there were stable markers of colony behavior, and there were characteristic ways in which they responded to the environment. So it is possible to have a type of measurement and understanding of a system, which my advisor established through long-term observation, where you can actually model this development through time, as well as within a population, which doesn't erase individual differences. It actually is the framework by which individual differences arise. And then Shannon, just so beautiful with music being introduced, like a thread of personality. And then that can be used to explore these regularities.
Because I like when it mentions here relatively stable parameters of cybernetic mechanisms, the sort of those kind of dynamics. And I think that links also to this idea of how that might change during our life and thinking about our lifetime. And one thing that I'm very interested in is when trauma comes into play, PTSD and other types of situations. And, you know, it's it can really shift the state of someone. And polyvagal theory kind of talks to that, where you've kind of got this sort of social co-regulation that we have as humans, but we also have our kind of primal kind of fight or flight, or our gut sort of fear responses, and how those things are, in a way, another type of like pattern behavior which becomes incredibly stable, too stable. Like, you can shut down, or you might get into rage, but then over the period of the day or life, the challenge is it may be unregulated about when they appear. So someone might sort of be a certain way, and then they flash into rage, you know, and then they come back into, and their personality is radically different. And I think this is, so there might be interesting to bring in that as a kind of a, what happens when that relatively stable state itself flips, you know, so that your mechanism might not be cognitive, but it might be in that kind of polyvagal system.
Yes, the body influencing phase transitions in personality or behavior. Adam, and then Colin.
Thanks. So I think Colin should probably speak to what was just brought up in terms of like what actually happens with people. But in terms of like a high level of abstraction, it seems like there's this sense in which you can think of personality as a kind of core screening, but it's in a kind of renormalization in terms of it existing as a phenomenon. And and epistemically, it's a kind of core screening afforded by this renormalization, this kind of throwing away of variability as you form these higher level attracting states, that you can ignore them within the scope of a certain type of modeling that you're engaging in with respect to having certain objectives of trying to predict certain things. Whether you're a personality modeler trying to predict someone else or trying to predict yourself or whatever. Within this, looking for this like optimal level of epistemic grip in terms of like the granularity of your description, you could describe these cybernetic control parameters as being part of the causal process of what's responsible. And then if you take the system and you perturb it, there's going to be a range where like the order parameter changes, and you can get these nonlinear, maybe phase shifts where the you're now in a different regime, and it may look like a very different kind of person because the personality structure as this stable attractor network can then become destabilized. And so that would be like a high level, and Colin should probably speak to like what actually happens with people.
Cool. Yeah, Colin, go for it.
So you get these phase shifts in behavior, but they're often due to persistent sensitivities in the underlying mechanisms, right? So let's take, PTSD, okay? What you have there essentially is some kind of traumatic event, is an intervention that resets the sensitivity of the threat systems. And so that corresponds quite well to the big five dimension that's labeled as neuroticism, which is an old-fashioned word, but in this context basically just means sensitivity to all different kinds of negative emotion. And so obviously that's heightened in PTSD, and what that means fundamentally is that you've gone through some kind of traumatic event that led to it wasn't just learning about a specific event, right? What it did was that it reset the sensitivity of your threat system as a whole. So now you are perceiving threats and reacting with defensive negative emotion to much more minor situations than you would have previously. And of course, even in terms of risk for PTSD, we know that people who are higher in threat sensitivity to begin with are more likely to develop PTSD. So it's not like it comes out of nowhere typically. But nonetheless, there's obviously this change. And there was a recent really nice meta-analysis of personality change following therapy. And different types of psychotherapy, whether it's pharmaceutical or talk therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy, all of these lead to changes in personality. And the trait that changes the most, as you might expect, is reductions in neuroticism, right? So what we're talking about here is the ability to shift these underlying parameters that are not constantly manifest in the same way. So when we say that somebody's high in trade anxiety, for example, we don't mean that they're experiencing anxiety at every minute of every day at a high level, right? We just mean that they're more likely to be anxious more intensely in more situations than somebody who is low in trade anxiety. But nonetheless, then if we really want to understand the dynamics of the system, we need to understand those phase shifts from like feelings of safety to feelings of anxiety at any given moment. And I think that's what you're talking about. But in order to understand how that works for a given agent, we also need to understand these persistent patterns of the sensitivities that lead them to have these shifts in different situations and to different degrees than other agents.
Very cool. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Stay tuned for next time, where we're going to have more discussions of this paper.